Hey, Mr. Grumpy Gills. When life gets you down, you know what you gotta do?
I don't wanna know what you gotta do.
Just keep swimming, just keep swimming, just keep swimming, swimming, swimming. What do? We swim, swim.
Dory, no singing.
Dory. I love to swim in.
Dory.
When you want to swim.
Welcome to The Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. And on this very episode, we have plenty of news and reviews before we decide the greatest Pixar film with our Pixar Movie Battle Royale. Now, let's keep on swimming. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today is my fellow ho, Johnny Davenport.
Yo.
Yeah.
That's all you get from me today.
I appreciate that. That's
nothing clever. People can figure out who I am. That's all they need.
That is all they need. And joining us from her homestead in L.A., Hollywood Central, Tamela LaPlaine.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. I think it's a Tamela LaPlaine. I made you French.
Yeah, you know what? I was in Paris last month, so I still have a little French vibe in me. Like, yeah.
That's right.
I'll accept it this time.
Well, first things first, and then we're going to talk about Pixar. We've got a bunch of other stuff that we're going to talk about. But I watched the trailer for the Halloween reboot. And I think, Tammy, you don't really like horror movies, right?
No, I don't care for horror, but I did remember watching one of the Halloween movies. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure I watched a couple of them before I became the scaredy cat that I am today. I'm pretty sure my sister was like, you are watching this because I'm in charge. And I think I watched I did watch the trailer for this just because I was curious, but I know I won't go watch it.
Well, you probably won't know. Well, you will understand my first complaint about, and it's hard to say because I know people are really excited about this. I'm not trying to knock it. I really am not, because I'm a big Halloween fan and I don't think it looks bad. It actually looks interesting. It just looks like something I've already seen before. But before I get to what bothers me in that respect, because John can talk to that, what about the hair? That wig is atrocious. Am I wrong?
Oh, I know there's some front lace wigs up in California you can find. There is His and Hers Hair right here on Wilshire that you can go. That you have so many choices. I'm sorry. I was like, ugh. I hate when they have bad hair in general. It just irks me so much. Like, there's so many possibilities.
It's a rat's nest. Jamie Lee Curtis has a beautiful head of closely cropped hair, and they put this atrocious wig on her because, hey, Laurie Strode would never cut her hair since the first movie, right? That's apparently the logic.
Well, I know some people. No, I don't. No, I don't know those people. I don't know why. It's just someone thought, okay, Laurie lives in wherever she lives, and apparently this is how the women like wear their hair. I'm sorry. I will go like renew my cosmetology license and cut some hair because that's just wrong. If that's how people in that area wear their hair. No offense to anyone.
She needs to hide by Edward Scissorhands because that's just a rat, long, tattered mess. It's just awful.
There's this thing called clippers. They'll work.
Right? You can get your hair cut for like $6 now. I mean, I got a coupon. I'm going to send Jamie Lee Curtis a coupon and see if she responds to it.
You know, but also you have to say the hair team needs work. It's almost like you got someone straight out of cosmetology school who was so new and didn't know that you can take a wig, a fresh wig, and make it look, you know, not like she's glamorous, but make her look nice and look like she's trying to live a life. But it didn't work. I think the look of itself, of Lori, just kind of like, okay, that's fine. Yeah.
Well, I think you kind of accidentally hit the nail on the head there. You mentioned trying to live a life, and in the trailer you get this idea where the only life she's been living is preparing for Michael Myers to break out. So how much of a life could that possibly be? It's kind of like Linda Hamilton in the psychiatric ward. Her body was awesome, but her face
her was hair was better. Her hair was better.
Her hair was better. Waiting for the apocalypse, and her hair was better.
She still had like her hair was nice. It was like in the middle of her back. She had small little waves, and she had bangs. So no, don't use that hoe. I have my life is blah blah blah. You still care about yourself and still get revenge. Hello.
Sure, in a perfect world, but this is far from a perfect world. Even in the movies, I bought the hair. I'm sorry, I bought it.
All right. Well, with 6 minutes on hair, we should probably move on to the other point that I had.
Right.
The other problem I have, and Tammy, you won't be able to speak to this because you don't watch the movies, but the whole point is Laurie Strode, they retcon all the previous movies, and Laurie Strode has been waiting for Michael Myers to break out of an insane asylum and come after her. That's been her primary objective. They did the same plot in H2O with Laurie Strode and Jamie Lee Curtis, where she was waiting for Michael Myers to break out and come after her and blah, 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 blah. Is it not the same damn thing?
Okay, so remind me which one was H2O.
The only one where Jamie Lee Curtis came back and fended off Michael Myers again after Halloween
2. No, is that the one with Busta Rhymes in it, or is it the one with...
No, it had Josh Hartnett in it, and
that's the one. So, like, that's the one where she went off and she lived a life and she had a kid and she was kind of happy, even though she was a little traumatically. She wasn't exactly waiting for Michael Myers to show up. I guess if you want to boil it down to the bare nuts and bolts of the story, sure, you're right. But I think this is from two different perspectives. One of them is from an area where she had mental health or at least a mental health professional looking out for her. And she actually went and did stuff with her hair and took care of herself. And she was banging some other guys around the corners. But in this one, in the new one, it's kind of like a different version of that story. It's like Gaslight Batman versus regular Batman.
What is this? The Flash showed up? Is it an alternate timeline? It doesn't make any sense. People seem really excited about this. Oh, they're doing this. This is cool. They're disavowing the other movies. I'm like, they did that. That's literally a retcon of a retcon.
Because the movie after H2O was a retcon.
What?
No, she was in the movie after that one. So no, that's not true.
Right, because it's the one after that where she dies.
Tammy, we cut
you off.
So
you don't even remember anymore.
No, I remember. I just don't want to argue that anymore because I feel like we should probably move on. All right. So this is sad, but I don't want to talk about the sad portion of this news, okay? Anthony Bourdain passed away this past week. Mm-hmm. So instead of focusing on that issue, which a lot of people have talked about over the past week, a lot of people feel very close to him and et cetera, et cetera. I don't want to talk about him specifically. I want to talk about this recent trend of celebrity chefs and how food and people like Anthony Bourdain and other celebrity chefs have kind of become this important entertainment element to so many people. Why is food entertainment now to you? Because I legitimately don't understand it. So I'm really hoping you guys can explain it to me.
I, as a woman who can't cook very well, I think it's mind-boggling that someone could take weird ingredients and make it look delicious. And then you have these celebrities who have a great personality that drives people to go venture out their comfort zone. You know, I know someone who will only eat Mexican food because that's her culture. She will not eat anything outside that. When she does, she nitpicks it. But at the same time, food can open up so much. I mean, my best friend, she's a foodie. And when she eats, she can taste flavor. She can break down the ingredients. It's an emotional thing for some people. I'm not one of them, but I think and then the celebrities that you have today, you have like Ludo and Michael Vitaggio, Roy Choi, who started the food truck movement. You have these big personalities who make this great food, and there's a connection. It's not in a gluttonous way. You know, for many years, food was seen as, you know, you're just being a fat pig. These are people who taste food, and they always tell you, you can feel the love of a chef through their food, and you can feel their passion through their food. So there's something kind of intimate about food. So people love these cooking shows because they're watching these chefs just go with their passion. One, they want to mimic it. Two, they want to eat it. And they just want to have this connection. If you ever go to a food fest, it's a weird community of people. And I mean, you can bring your platter so you can get a bunch of food, because that's so much fun. It is. And you just sometimes you meet people and you communicate, and it's all through food.
You know, it's funny you brought this whole subject up, because just recently on an episode of a YouTube show called Hot Ones, which is a show where people and celebrities get together and they get interviewed while eating progressively hotter hot wings, which, I mean, that's me all over the place. Mm-hmm. But Alton Brown was recently on an episode, and he is a celebrity chef, and he's done a lot of different celebrity cooking shows. And what he said was the reason why why cooking shows have become more legitimate and they've risen to the ranks they have risen to is because of 9/11. And basically he boils it down to 9/11 happened, and then people around the United States were looking for ways to comfort themselves and watch something that was not very deep, but however made them feel better about themselves and gave them something to do that took their mind off of everything. And what better way of doing that than comforting themselves through food? And that is the main reason why a lot of these cooking shows have just gone out of control now. And he also states that shows like MasterChef and all these other ones where people are making it a competition are starting to now bring up the idea that everyone wants to come up and be a celebrity chef, and instead of letting it happen organically, and it's starting to really dilute and worsen the industry. But it's just really cool that it's something not really, it's interesting to see that something came from 9/11 like that, but also that it's something that apparently we all needed to start feeling better.
Well, it fascinates me because I'm not a foodie, you know, I just eat. Hey, there's food. Yeah. I'll eat it. You know, I mean, obviously I'm not very particular, but I have friends that will watch Home and Garden and Celebrity Chefs for hours, and they're constantly telling me about the recipes. And one thing that I noticed that the people that watch them most is it's almost to a degree, and I don't have this same reaction that they do, but I watch it by hearing them explain it. I get this kind of, I kind of can resonate with what they're feeling. I'm empathetic. And as they're explaining it, it's almost like when you hear people talk about their passion for music or their passion for art of any kind. It really is an art for a lot of people. And I didn't understand that until probably very, very recently. But we started getting, what is it, HelloFresh? We started trying that.
Yeah.
Yeah, where they send
HelloFresh. HelloFresh is the best.
Right. We tried Blue Apron. Let me tell you, I don't care how many podcasts advertise it, I don't like it. So HelloFresh.
Me too. I hate it.
Right?
I hate it.
It's not that good.
So I was like, I was so angry with it. I get that. HelloFresh is the best.
Yes. This podcast brought to you by Blue Apron.
Not anymore.
Sorry, boo.
It's not going to happen anytime soon. But HelloFresh like packages the ingredients, ship it to your house. It's all iced and everything. And I started because you have to prepare the, now it gives you all the food, but it gives you a recipe and you still have to prepare it. And it's fun. It's not fun when you have to go to the store and pick it all out. It is kind of fun when you have it all there for you, easy to figure out, you know, simplified directions, and you're doing it. You're going through it. I can understand a little bit more now than I used to. I just never understood. I didn't used to understand why people would watch it on TV, but people, they get really passionate about it. It's an art form for them. Interesting.
Yeah, I've mentioned before how I love watching the Great British Bake Off. And part of the reason why I love watching it is because if there's anything I'm going to spend my time cooking in the kitchen, it's going to be a dessert, that or turkey. You only have those two options with me. And so I love it for that reason. But I also love it because it's just, it is really the kind of show where I can just unwind. I don't have to tax myself or build myself up or get myself mentally ready to watch it. I can just put it on and I can be okay and unwind. And that's why I enjoy it. Now, likewise, I used to be a big fan of Hell's Kitchen. And that was just because I loved watching Gordon Ramsay dress somebody down, call them all sorts of names. I think the BBC version of it, or the maybe it was Channel 4 or whatever it was out there, that version of it was probably better than the US version before they kind of gentrified it. But it's still a fun show to definitely watch.
I never got into Hell's Kitchen. I'm more of a Top Chef girl and Master Chef Kids. I will start. Okay, I get all like, my little cold heart gets all like misty, and I'm like, oh, little kids who can cook better than me.
Is that what it is? Like, it's like kids cooking. Yeah. Is that what it is?
Yeah, kids. Oh, yeah. Like, I think 14 and under. Like, so you have kids who are 6 to 14 cooking. And wow. I think it's amazing. And I wish I could cook. But I love those kind of shows. But watching someone actually make food, it's hard for me to watch because I'm like, why is there so many ingredients? and I don't like that. I won't say that. But I like, sometimes I like it. Sometimes it's just too much. And I don't, but I get what they're saying. But like I said, my best friend watches those shows because she doesn't watch TV a lot, but she'll watch, you know, I'll come home and she's like, I'm watching Cooking Channel, and we'll sit there for like 12 hours and just watching Cooking Channel. It's just a phenomenon for people. But I, you know what? I did not know about the 9/11 thing, and that kind of makes sense.
That's interesting. Yeah. That's an interesting way to look at it. Yeah. All right. Well, Matthew Vaughn has confirmed he will launch a reboot of Kick-Ass and Hit Girl, as well as conclude the Kingsman trilogy with one more film, as well as he's going to have a prequel and a TV series. Do you think he's getting a little carried away with this world building he's doing?
It's easy to sit there and look at somebody who's going to take on a big bite and say, you're getting carried away. Or if
that's
it works
out.
That's what
we do, John. That's exactly what we do.
Well, I mean, it is. But so I'm just trying to say, because here's the thing. Years down the road, when it all works out, we're going to be the jack wagons that are really going to forget we actually said he got carried away. So because he could be a complete genius because he comes up with a nice, awesome thing and executes it. So do I think, as a person, do I think that we need more Kick-Ass and Hit Girl? No. I think it's a little too soon, and unless you're going to tell me that he has a better way of telling that story than the way he did before, then we don't need more of that. But Kingsman, give me a prequel. Give me a finish it off. Give me a TV series. I'm kind of okay with that. Let it happen. So long as they keep the TV series down to 8, 10, maybe 12 at most episodes. It could be fun.
But in 2017, didn't he kind of hint that he was going to do Man of Steel 2? So what's up?
He's unreliable. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying, okay, I knew that he said, like, around 2017, like late 2017, he did say Kingsman is a trilogy in his head. He has to finish. I was like, okay, that's cool. But the same, like in the same week, he was also hinting that, oh, there might be a Man of Steel 2. Listen, my boo Henry is waiting in the wings to do his second movie. Give my baby his movie.
I agree.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
He does because he's the only one who just got shot down. But okay, I'm okay with Kingsman and the prequels, but I'm not sure about the Kick-Ass. I'm like, dude, no.
Yeah, same thing. Kingsman, I'm all for. Kick-Ass is kind of, I mean, I would watch a Hit Girl movie, especially if you did a prequel, like showed her coming up, go even littler.
Be
like, 6-year-old.
Yeah, totally. Just hit, a kindergarten, just slicing people to death. That would be great.
Baby, just kicking kids' ass.
Only if you bring Nick Cage back for it.
Yes.
Yes, I agree.
Honestly,
I don't think you could do Hit Girl without Nick. I think he would be you. I want to see him do his training. Mm-hmm. Maybe we should do it on the dad and his training, because that I will watch.
Oh man, like an
as a TV show.
It's like Hit Girl's. What was his name? Big Daddy. Big Daddy Begins. Yes. Big Daddy Begins. That's the
yes.
Kick-Ass prequel.
School of Big Daddy.
It's just him at a daycare training a bunch of little ninjas.
Yes, yeah, I will watch that over just the other people.
Putting ballistic vests on them and shooting them all?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't see the problem, honey.
Mm-mm. Yeah. No, I'm all about, I mean, maybe not at a school. That's why you call it a daycare, because touchy subject. You know what I'm saying? So daycare is cool. Yeah. Right? And only swords. I think they're too young for guns. So swords.
That's true. Yes, because they can work on their handmanship and their combat ship crap stuff.
That felt like a word. Sure.
Stage combat stuff, says the girl who actually did stage combat, and work on that. And then that way, when the ninjas come, they can work with them with that. They don't need guns. They could be above the guns. They were like, no guns for us.
Oh, I like it. Yeah, I'm on board. Mm-hmm. I'm on board. Speaking of, you brought up DC, so we might as well talk about this. Last week, DC's entertainment president, Diane Nelson, exited. This week, current DC Entertainment publisher Jim Lee was announced he'll be taking over the position of Chief Creative Officer. Everybody has all these fancy titles. At DC Entertainment, as Geoff Johns is going to be stepping down to launch Mad Ghost Productions and oversee existing DC properties from a more like creative position. So he's going to be doing more of the creative aspect of it as opposed to running the ship. John, what do you think of DC's move?
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily DC's move. Maybe Geoff Johns just got tired of being pulled in 15 million directions to do this instead. I think one of his longtime partner did the same thing just recently, just to become a on-set producer. The thing that I like the most about this is that Jim Lee is stepping up to be the creative director for the DC universe. And to me, that's a good idea. And even though people keep on like pointing out how he's just a comic book publisher and all these other things, and we'll talk about this a little bit more later, but I think we are getting into a habit of movies becoming sort of like books on tape instead of them relying on visually telling you a story. And I think going in a direction where somebody who has the ability of doing that, of creating a visual cohesive line, is much better off than somebody who's always telling us the story.
I don't know. I think DC's been doing visual storytelling. That's been some of what people have complained about. It was more, the visuals were striking. It looked just like a comic book, but the story was kind of, that's where I think the Zack Snyder world was at.
Well, yeah, but Geoff Johns had his hand in a lot of that, and he's a writer by trade. So if he has his hand in a lot of the writing, then what is that? That tells me that Geoff Johns might be part of the problem, which is hard for me to say, because I thought when he took this reign, I was like, yeah, Geoff Johns. And then Aaron comes in with, yeah, but he made Green Lantern. And I went, crap.
He did. It's true.
Isn't he trying to reboot Green Lantern? That's why he's leaving?
Like, part of his it,
first-
yeah.
His first project is to be the Green Lantern. I'm sorry, I said Lantern.
He's doing the Green Lantern Corps, which he famously brought out of obscurity in the DC universe because of his storyline within the comics. And that's where he kind of got his great big accolades from, was because he rescued Aquaman. He rescued Green Lantern Corps. He there's a bunch of things that he kind of turned around as far as the writing is concerned in DC to create something great for the comics. However, somehow, some way, maybe it is as simple as pointing the finger at Zack Snyder and saying it's because of this guy's visual style. But there is something definitely missing. As much as I love the DC movies, and I will watch, I actually started watching Justice League again last night. I don't know. I think the idea of changing things up might be good for them. At this point, what could it hurt?
Well, they need to. Obviously, there's something wrong because DC has like some of the best characters. I mean, if I was to say what characters I know more, it's going to be DC, but I gravitate towards Marvel for the simple fact that there's a better understanding of the stories and pulling it together for people like me who don't know their stories. And so I think the problem is people like Geoff Johns, they rely on people knowing the story and they expect you to know it. And they don't put enough effort into the story for someone like me who's like, what? Yeah, I know Superman, but I haven't read Superman since I was 12. And dude, I am way older than 12. So I won't know.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then you have someone appears like my mom who's 70 and she's like, what is this crap? This is not what I know. So you have to make it, I'm not going to say dumb it down, but you have to grab me as someone like me so I can say, I understand this, that I know it's a part of whatever they're writing in the comic books and I want to love it at this, but visually, but I'm not going to read the comics. They're not doing it. They're just like, throwing it out there and say, oh, you're going to love this. No, I don't. Work on that.
I never really thought he was the solution to begin with. So I'm totally fine with this. I mean, I understand he's a wunderkind. What's the word? He's fantastic in the comic book world. I get that they love him. He saved a bunch of comics. That's great. I haven't seen that translated to film in any way, shape or form.
And, exactly.
Right, right. And he was behind Green Lantern, the movie that was him and Greg Berlanti, who's now running every DC freaking TV show, were both behind that movie that everybody hates. So I don't know why you would want either people involved with DC properties, but they both are. So I don't
know. Well, Greg Berlanti's doing, as far as DC TV is concerned, those are, I mean, they're stretched out to 24 episodes. And I mean, if they could cut it down, that'd be great, but they're still pretty good.
Did you watch The Flash this season?
Like I said, cut it down a few episodes.
Yeah.
Cut it down to 15, because I swear last season, I'm a girl who would I'll go buy me some chicken wings on Tuesday and we'll have a whole spread and watch The Flash. This season, I was like, I'm going to go do yoga. Bye. Because it was horrible. I just watched the season finale today and I was just like, this is total trash. What the F happened to my show? So Berlanti needs to get his ego in check and go write a good story. That's their problem. Their ego. So they're like, oh, I'm getting all this money and no one's writing a good freaking story, and get better writers. I don't know what the, let me drink my beer.
Well, I think he's got too many shows under his plate. I think what's the count? 14, something like that?
14 or something like that. Like Black Lightning was actually pretty nice, but also Black Lightning is cut down to 8 or 12 episodes.
I want to say
10.
Was it good? Yeah. Did you watch it?
I didn't watch it.
I just watched it on Netflix because they did release it a couple weeks ago on Netflix, and I watched the whole thing, and it's got a decent, coherent story, and that's good. And sure, it gets a little preachy here and there, but that's because I am who I am, and it does get a little preachy here and there. But other than that, it's okay.
Yeah, it does its job. You know, it's very entertaining. It was entertaining. The episodes I watched, it was entertaining. I was like, oh, this is pretty good. I think it was like right around Flash. So, you know, I wasn't really watching TV because Flash was trash this season. So I really messed up and didn't watch it all the way. But I think I'm going to do it. Since it's summertime, I'll probably do a run through of it for season 2.
My biggest concern as far as DC movie universe is concerned is if they continue on this threat that they might be diluting everything down too much. So with the idea of there's the DC extended universe of movies, which is 5 movies so far, I think by this count, but then they're also talking about 2 different Joker movies now, and then a whole nother series of Batman movies with a different Batman. This is ridiculousness. This right here is what Marvel would never, ever, ever do. They would
exactly
stick to one coherent story and find a way to make everything stand alone, but yet link up in nice, simple ways so it feels the same ish throughout each movie. And that's what bothers me the most about what DC does is doing, is because it sounds like they're just grasping at straws trying to keep up versus sticking to what they have and making it work, which they can definitely make what they have work. I just understand why aren't they doing that.
I think Snyder was probably the only one who was trying to do that.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And it was slow, and but he was trying to build something, and people knocked him and all this stuff. But I was like, there was more to it. I think they shouldn't have did Batman versus Superman. I do think that that's where they messed up. I think they should have built on it so when we got Justice League, it would have been like, yes, but no, we got. It was just all these groupings, and it didn't make, there was no connection. The thing about Marvel, they made a connection for you, whether we knew it was going to meet up or not. You had your Captain America, you had Thor, you had all these people, and you're like, oh, and then when they say Avengers, you're like, what? They're all going to meet up? Is this real? And then, so it made it more of a thrill. But DC is trying so hard. They're like that kid who just like, you know, I could kick a ball. Look how fast I could kick, you know, look how hard I can kick this ball. And it's like, you're kicking it to nowhere because nobody can, it doesn't make any sense. Like my analogy made no sense. That's DC. They make no freaking sense. Why the F are you going to do a Batman story when you finally get a, well, okay, I like Christian Bale. Mm-hmm. You have a very good Batman. And then you're going to just say, no, we're going to go to a different route and leave that man hanging. Why do you think Ben Affleck started drinking again? Because y'all feel with him. I would drink too. Leave that man alone and give him a movie. Yeah. See, that's what they do. They get these good people and they bring them on. They're like, yeah, yeah. And then all of a sudden they hear a fan reaction. And what they do, they react to. And so the people who are actually working their ass off, who are trying to be cohesive and give you a good story, because Ben Affleck does believe in a good story. And I don't think he was behind all that shit. He's like, what the F are you guys doing? And he's just like, no, I'm staying in the background because I don't know what I want to do anymore because you guys are effing everything up.
You're just effing all over the place. I'm telling you.
Shoot, don't effing, F up.
You're fired up.
I'm very serious about my comic book movies, yeah, as you could tell. Even though I don't read the comic books, I do watch the movies.
Somebody had to say it.
Gotta have my Ben Affleck. I really wanted a Ben Affleck solo Batman movie, but I don't think I'm ever going to get it, so...
And
that's sad because I think he would have did a great job. Absolutely. I mean, I didn't think he should have originally, like when he said he wanted to direct it, I was like, no, I think you need to let someone else direct it, mm-hmm, be a writer. But I was really looking forward to that too.
Me too. I really was looking forward to him directing or actually writing. I don't need him to direct it, but I would have loved to see what he wrote because I think he's probably got a great script, even though DC looked at it and said, no. Well, I'm not trusting them these days, so my money's on Affleck. I mean, the guy's got an Oscar. DC.
It was too cohesive. That's what it was. They were like, what is this?
This makes too much sense. Get it out of here.
People will understand a story.
Jennifer Maloney wrote in. She wanted to ask us, have you ever gone on a TV hiatus or even a partial TV hiatus? I got to thinking about it recently because I decided to turn off my streaming options for the summer, Netflix, Hulu, HBO, and just stick with whatever I record from TV, get from Netflix, DVD, or see using MoviePass, which is still tons of options. It seems like sometimes decision overload sets in when we have nearly unlimited options, and not having access to those options for a while feels so relieving. Plus, it also makes time to do other things like read or play video games or learn how to speak, in my case. Do you guys disconnect in any way like this for the summer?
Not even. No. I wish I was. I wish I could sit here and say, yes, I disconnect and I find myself, blah, 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 blah. No, I don't. What I will do, and I will say I do get overwhelmed only during the fall season because I see a new schedule, I see my old shows, I see new shows I want to check out. That's when I get overwhelmed, and that's when I need to be there. But in the summer, I don't turn off anything when I should. I watch reruns, like the marathon blocks on TNT and stuff. I'll watch Big Bang Theory literally every night for 2 hours, mm-hmm, because I like doing that. On the weekends, if I'm home, I'm watching Golden Girls. Straight up, you will come in my house, 8 o'clock in the morning, TV's on, Golden Girls. When I go to bed, into Golden Girls. It's what I do. But I still go to movies, but it's just, I never disconnect. That's why I have yoga. I disconnect for an hour, hour and a half there, but not at home. Sorry.
Yeah.
Good luck.
John, what about you? Do you disconnect?
I think I disconnected a long time ago because I got rid of cable years and years ago now. And I only rely on streaming services and whatever I feel like buying on Microsoft Video or anything like that. So I know exactly what she's talking about because when I had cable, it was still appointment television. But number two, I had cable. I had to keep the appointment going. So when I got rid of it, I slowly but surely started to disconnect from having that appointment time. So now I can go a full stretch of days without even turning on my TV, which is not really great for the podcast, but it happens. And yeah, go figure. I can go a whole stretch of days. But the thing that's funny is that I do run into days where like I start feeling overwhelmed by life in general. And I will just be like, all right, well, I guess I'm catching up on The Flash, or all right, I'm going to catch up on some show now on Netflix. It's just something that ends up happening. And I'm OK with that now because I do have more time in my life to prep things for a show or to get my art taken care of or to go outside and experience life. And over the weekends, I actually disconnect from Facebook. I'll still use Instagram a lot for a couple of things. But for the most part, I'm off of Facebook because I'm more interested in experiencing something outside or through creation versus having it fed to me through either TV or through my phone now.
I think you talked for 7 minutes straight right there. I think like I don't even think you breathed. Poor guy.
And barely no stutter too.
I'm concerned about, I'm concerned.
Passion.
Yeah. Passion, string of thought, whatever it was. It was interesting. I'm like, I wonder how much longer he's going to go. I bet she's got a few more in him. Yep, sure does. I would, to answer your question, Jennifer, yes, I do. I guess I'm the only one that does. Well, John kind of does. I purposely, well, I've talked about it before. I go backpacking, I do that sort of thing, and I make sure I turn my phone off. I don't watch really anything I read. I try to do that throughout the year. It's harder in the winter in the Midwest because there's nothing else to do but read and watch TV, really. So I do that. During the summer, yeah, I will definitely. I watch less movies at home. I watch more in the theater. I don't really watch much TV during the summer, but I also do two freaking TV podcasts. So I'm kind of burned out on television by the time summer hits.
Well, yeah, that's different. Yeah. That's a little more intense.
A little bit. It feels like work more to watch TV. So summer, I kind of relax. I want to sit on my deck, you know, have a drink, read a book, relax.
I want a deck.
Oh, well, you're in LA. What would that cost you? $8 billion a month?
I'm thinking about doing a deck at my mom's house because I'm going to take over that house. And nice. I'm already like thinking about things like that. And yeah, you're about $8 billion. I only have $7
Save up. It's coming. It's coming.
Oh, good, good.
Before we move on to our reviews, we do want to say thank you to our Patreon supporters. Thank you again. There is a new Face-Off episode for Bad Movie Night where we talk about Face-Off and how insanely crazy that movie is, as well as there's
that
a bonus.
Good.
It is. We do talk about how good it is, and some people think it's awful. Screw those people.
They don't know anything. That's all.
I agree. They got it wrong. Well, they know.
They did. Yeah. I love that movie so much.
They just didn't get it, Tammy. They just didn't get it. So if you want to support The Hollywood Outsider, you can go to patreon.com/The Hollywood Outsider. And there's bonus episodes, plus it really does help the podcast. So thank you for that. patreon.com/The Hollywood Outsider. All right, now we go on to reviews. First one is Ocean's 8. Tammy, you're gonna lead me. So tell us about Ocean's 8.
After 5 years in prison, Debbie Ocean has come up with the best heist to rob the Met Ball. With the help of her best friend, Lou, along with Amita, Tammy, and Constance, and Rose, and Nineball, played by Rihanna, they are about to pull off the biggest heist of their career. What did you think, Aaron?
Wow. Well, I will say, first off, the cast is stellar. Everybody is, I mean, it's a perfect cast. I really don't think they could have done much better. Even Helena Bonham Carter shocked me because she's not crazy. She's actually restrained and seems like a real character, not just her crazy outlandish self that she's been the last ever. I really love Cate Blanchett. I think she's fantastic. I think Sandra Bullock really has the Danny Ocean vibe. Not quite as smooth as George Clooney, but has some moments. My issue was strictly with the story and the heist.
Did you have issues with comparing it to the other Oceans?
Yes, I did. And they referenced the trilogy way too much. They really, for a movie that needs to stand on its own for the next three movies and whatnot, they reference Danny quite a bit. They're constantly throwing him into the background. It's just one of those things where I realized they wanted to connect them, but at some point, make the acknowledgement, move on. Let me watch this movie. And they kept coming back to Danny up until, you know, throughout the movie. It's a constant.
Yeah, I thought that they should have just kept it at one or two. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But it was like seven. Also, who was your favorite character? Did you have one?
Yeah, Awkwafina. Awkwafina. Really? Yes, she was insane. She was crazy. She was fun. Cate Blanchett was good as Lou, but I really felt her and Sandra Bullock were trying too hard to be Clooney and Pitt. So all I kept feeling was you're just doing a rehash of that whole thing. So I really had a lot of fun with Awkwafina because I don't know who the hell she is as a singer or whatever she does. I don't know. I don't know her from Adam.
I don't know her either. So we're both new.
Yeah. All I knew is her name is stupid. But outside of that.
Her name is Water.
Yeah. Her name is Water. So, hey, there's an H2O connection. Several scenes in the movie where I thought she was hysterical. Rihanna was really good, too. I really wanted her to get more screen time.
I wanted Rihanna to have more screen time because I think she's a better actress than people are giving her credit for.
Very.
I was very captivated by Blanchett. I don't know why. I've seen her movies before, but something about maybe it was the outfits. Okay, I will say. I wanted every single outfit, even the sequence one. I will rock it somewhere, but I think it was mainly her clothes that really captured me, but I loved her. I loved all of them. And I just, and I, you know, I gotta love Tammy in the film, cause she is my namesake. Mm-hmm. But I realized something. It has Paula, what's her name? Paula, Sarah Paulson. Has she ever done like a big movie?
I don't think so. Like, she's more of a indie character TV. Actress. Yeah. TV. Yeah.
I'm like, I don't remember ever seeing her on like big screen. And I think I was just like really in awe of the fact that I've seen her on, in television for so many years, and to see her work that magic on screen was really cool for me. So
the only problem I have, and this is what really hurt the movie a lot for me, is, and I don't want to say anything that will spoil it, because obviously people are listening and they haven't seen it. The heist for me, which is paramount to these movies working, was absolutely ridiculous. Because, not that it wasn't cool that they were going to the Met Gala and they wanted to steal his necklace, and you know, there's underlying motives and $150 million. We get all that. It's that the only way that it works and it comes together is a random character completely changes course for absolutely no realistic reason. You take that out, the heist doesn't work. And it makes no sense to me. And then there's a Deus Ex Machina where something comes up at the end that was never introduced at any point throughout the movie. And it's supposed to be like, oh, that was really cool. And all I kept thinking was, well, that came out of their ass because it didn't belong there. But the character change, which I can't say what it is or who it is or anything like that, because that would totally spoil it. But it really does not work for me. And that hurt the movie a lot.
Okay. I hear you.
Did you like the heist?
Overall, I did, because I was like, I wanted to see the costumes. I was like, what are they going to the Met Gala? What are they going to wear? I think Anne Hathaway played the actress very well. It's hard for me to watch Anne Hathaway because I saw her at a Johnny Flynn concert making out with her husband so much, I thought they were having sex in front of me. Mm. So watching her like make out with that guy, I was like, yeah, I can see her doing with her husband. Uh-huh. It's hard for me to watch her on film now because she sucked face so hard in front of me. But I thought she did great.
Such a weird predicament.
It is. It's really weird because all is. I can see is her and her husband just literally going at it in front of me. And I'm like, I'm trying to watch a show, people.
All right. Well,
no lie.
Totally believe you. So if $10 is the full price of admission, what do you give Ocean's 8, Tammy?
$7.50.
All right. I give it 5. I love the cast, though. I would really like to see more movies. I just want better writers. That's all.
I agree, but you just hurt me and Rihanna.
I love Rihanna. Give Rihanna her spinoff. I don't care. I really enjoyed her. She was fun.
Yes, with her little shit sister. Sorry.
Her and Awkwafina. I want them to go off and do their own thing.
That's oh, my fun. God. Do you know how crazy that movie would be?
It'd be fun.
Oh.
It'd be fun.
See, now you got things in my head. That's fan fiction right there for you.
Okay, we also have Hereditary. When Ellen passes away after a lifetime of psychological issues, her daughter Annie, played by Toni Collette, and her family begins to unravel a mysterious ancestry they never expected to learn about. It's a story about family, believing in something more than yourself, and supernatural mumbo-jumbo. That's all I'm going to say about it, because how it unfolds is half the fun. First question, Johnny. Were you scared in Hereditary, or is the hype overblown? Because people have been saying scariest movie of the year, scariest movie in forever, yada, yada. Were you scared?
I feel like the hype was overblown with this movie. I was having flashbacks to It Follows at certain points. Now, not saying that it was as I hated it nearly as much as I hated It Follows, but I was kind of having flashbacks to how the hype really let me down. It had some moments that made me uncomfortable, and there is a lot of times where I felt like. This movie needed to be at least 10 degrees subtler than it was, because subtlety is not what it does very well.
I agree with that. I will say the hype was it might have done the movie a disservice, because you walk in, think, I didn't really find maybe two or three things that were even unnerving. I found the movie unnerving, I think is the word I would use. I didn't find it scary. There's just some things that get under your skin a little bit. But I don't know what people were talking about. I didn't find it terrifying in any way, shape, or form. But I'm also kind of stunted in that respect.
Well, I think what they, as far as the unnerving thing, because I did feel the unnerving, and I think that had a lot to do with how they kind of shot it and how they, there were, I thought they did a lot of really cool things where you didn't know if you were looking at a diorama or if you were looking at them in reality, or, you know, and they switched back and forth between those two features. And I thought that was a really good use of the camera angles. The other thing that they did is the sound design is pretty great, and it is sort of unnerving, but scary. No, it was, I could call out what was going to be the next step mm-hmm. because of how not subtle they were being. And especially and the one thing I do give my hats off to them on is with as not subtle as the whole movie is, they kind of nailed the landing with not being subtle with the ending at all in any way too.
Okay, I can't say anything about the ending because I don't want to ruin anything, but I will say if it would have cut 5 minutes before it actually ended, this movie would be way better. Like, to me, it would be much better. They, it's almost like they treat the audience like they're idiots at some point. They're like, hey, everything we already told you, we're going to hammer everything into your head and you're going to know exactly what we meant. And we're going to be so literal, it's sickening.
Right.
That's a problem with the movie. But that's not to say that it's a bad movie. I will say the cast, stellar. Toni Collette, stellar. You agree with this? I mean, the woman put me through the ring. She elevated the movie all on her own to me.
Yeah, well, I mean, she was definitely amazing. And Alex Wolff is, I feel like, somebody we need to keep an eye on in the future because he was pretty his whole range of emotions was swinging the gambit like crazy.
Yeah.
It's not, I could do without Millie Shapiro, though.
She's the weird young little girl who has some odd features, and yeah, she's a little, but her character's very weird, very quirky, unique, different. Mm-hmm. Tammy, what were you going to ask? Go ahead.
Was this a Blumhouse or whatever the hell it's called? It's not?
No, it's A24 released. This one was.
Yeah, they're a hit and miss, but I know they're kind of like, they take things sometimes way too seriously, so maybe they're not ready for scary movies.
It's very very much like The Witch in that vein. If you like The Witch, I think you would really like this movie.
Yeah, it sounds like it's scary, so I haven't watched it. But you know what I have heard about this movie? Either you loved it or you hated it. There's no in between.
I'm pretty in between. But I could see that. I think the ending is very much love it or hate it.
Okay, so that makes sense. And I was like, all right, well, you guys have fun with that.
I do hate the ending. I do.
That sucks.
No, it's literally the last 5 minutes. If they stop at 5 minutes before that, I think it moves up at least $1 in my score. I mean, that's how much, maybe $2. I mean, the ending really made that kind of an impact. It just whiffed.
So just tell the theater to stop it.
Yeah.
What I really enjoyed it was the theater experience for the last 10 minutes, because the theater experience for the last 10 minutes when everything really just goes off the chain was hysterical. Yeah. I loved every moment of listening to everyone's reaction in the last 10 minutes.
I agree with that. Here's the one thing I want to say, or I want to ask you. My favorite horror movies are great for repeat viewing. Is this something you could actually rewatch and still have the same effect, or is most of it lost because you've already watched it?
This is one of those that's lost because I've already watched it.
Okay, that's what I thought. Mm. I concur. So $10 is the full price of admission. What do you give Hereditary?
$5.50.
I give it $6.50. So
wow,
not too far off. Not scariest movie of the year, unless you haven't seen any other scarier movies.
And it's not the heir apparent to Exorcist either.
No, it's not. It's, people say that once a year, there's some movie that makes that claim. This year's Exorcist. Sure it is. Sure. Unless that little girl grabs a cross and does some crazy stuff while swearing. Nope. Don't agree.
All right. Like at that club at night.
Johnny, we're not going to talk about this very long. We're just for a minute. I just want you to answer this one question about the Sense8 finale for the people that are debating watching it, because for whatever reason, on Netflix, okay? Answer this one question that fans want to know. Without spoiling it, does it give the series an ending it deserves because it's now available on Netflix?
Yes.
Okay. There we go.
Okay. I can finish watching it. Okay. I turned it off halfway because I was like, I'm not ready. Okay.
That's what we needed. There you go. All right.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Let's go to our upcoming releases, Johnny.
All right, so coming up first on the 13th, we have Superfly. This is the remake of the 1972 blaxploitation film Superfly. This is directed by Director X. That's exactly what he wants his director name to be, Director X.
Okay. Malcolm X fan, I'm guessing.
Maybe. Okay. Maybe he's an X-Men fan. Who can tell these days? So it stars Jennifer Morrison, Trevor Jackson, Michael Kenneth, Omar is Coming Williams, and Jason Mitchell.
Ooh, I love Jason Mitchell.
Isn't the lead the guy from Grown-ish? Isn't it him?
Possibly. We're probably maybe too Caucasian to know.
Yeah, I forgot. Sorry. It's okay. I have to go
apparently
check my
so is Tammy.
Card. Well, you know, sometimes I have to check my black card.
All right. So following up on the 15th, we have the release of Incredibles 2. Bob Parr, Mr. Incredible, is left to care for Jack-Jack while Helen, Elastic Girl, is out saving the world. This is directed by Brad Bird, stars Craig T. Nelson, Holly Hunter, Sarah Vowell, and Huck Milner is in the running now. And everybody else who you loved from the original is coming back. Follow that up by Tag. A small group of former classmates organize an elaborate annual game of tag that requires some to travel all over the country. This is directed by Jeff Tomsnick. This stars Isla Crazy Eyes, But I Still Would Fisher, Annabelle Wallace, Jake Everyman Johnson, John Ham in His Pants, Jeremy Grumpy Cat Renner, Rashida, Yeah, You Better Believe It Jones, Leslie, okay, if the other two are busy, Bib, Ed Helms, Brian Dennehy, and Hannibal Buress. Then on VOD, we have on the 15th, not Hereditary, but Inheritance. Maybe the same movie, who knows?
It's a sequel.
It's a sequel. When Ryan mysteriously, this is starting to sound a little weird, inherits a house, okay, from his biological father, a man he thought was long dead, he and his pregnant fiance, because that's always a good idea, travel to the property with high hopes of the future. But curiosity about his deceased father leaves Ryan to uncover a dark family history. So this, yeah, it's Inheritance. It's Hereditary Inheritance. Who can it's the same damn movie?
Yep.
Chase Joliet stars with Sarah Manette, Dale Dickey, my bad, and Drew Powell. And I think, Aaron, for Yellowbirds, we have a recent interview with them, with the director, right?
Correct. There's an interview in the feed right now. You can hear it with the director of Yellowbirds. Great guy.
Yep. Also on VOD is two young soldiers, Yellowbirds, Bartel and Murph, navigate the terrors of Iraq War under the command of an older, troubled Sergeant Sterling. All while Bartel is tortured by the promise he made to Murph's mother in their deployment. So this stars Alden Ehrenreich.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, Han Solo, Jennifer Aniston, Toni Collette is back, so that's probably a good reason to see it. And mm-hmm. Ty Sheridan are all in this movie.
Yeah.
Now.
Great cast.
Yeah. Solid cast. So we have a couple of different movies, VOD and in the theaters. Tammy, what are you going to go see this weekend?
Tag. I've been wanting to see this movie since I saw the trailer. I was like, oh, yes, this is my kind of thing. And it's based on a true story. Hell yeah, out there.
All right.
I will. Well, first thing, Tammy, it is the same guy from Grown-ish. So is Trevor Jackson is the same guy from Grown-ish. So you are correct.
Okay.
Good job.
Yahoo!
I'm probably going to go with Tag as well. Definitely Tag. I don't want to give a spoiler for what I'm going to talk about later. So definitely Tag. But I did find something interesting before we move on, or before John throws his in there. Director mm-hmm. Brad Bird was given an interview with IO9, I think it was, and he said he's not interested in doing sequels to Ratatouille and The Iron Giant, which are both big movies that he's done, because he doesn't want to do sequels to those kind of movies. But he feels pressure to do them because, quote, no one apparently wants anything new anymore. I thought that was very sad.
That is really sad.
Sad, but true.
It is true, yeah.
Well, not me. I want something new, so Tag it is, and besides, I want to laugh.
Yeah. Definitely.
I can't wait. So can't wait.
But check out Yellowbirds if you're into war movies. It's not like a typical war film. It's really more of a mystery. And it's kind of interesting how it plays out. And I think the ending's going to be hard for some people to swallow. But if you're familiar with veterans or you've been in the military, it works. You just might not see why it works. Okay, now it's time for our From the Outside In topic. And this week it is a Pixar movie, Battle Royale. Pixar began in 1979 as the Graphics Group, part of the Lucasfilm Computer Division, before it spun out as a corporation in 1986 with funding by Apple Inc. co-founder Steve Jobs. I think a lot of people know that. He became the majority shareholder for a time. Disney purchased Pixar in 2006 and is best known for CGI computer animated films. I guess I don't need to see computer animated, so just CGI animated because the computer's implied. Pixar has produced 20 feature films, beginning with Toy Story in 1995, which was the first ever computer animated feature film, and its most recent being The Incredibles 2, which we just talked about. All 19 of its previous films have debuted with CinemaScore ratings of at least an A-, and as of June 2018, its feature films have earned approximately $12 billion at the worldwide box office, with an average worldwide gross of $634 million per film. The studio has earned 19 Academy Awards, 8 Golden Globe Awards, and 11 Grammy Awards. 9 of those Academy Awards were for Best Animated Feature, which means everybody else that has gone up for an Animated Feature Award hates Pixar. So
it's an inevitable loss.
Yes. That's a lot of information. But I really thought it was important to tell people like where Pixar started and where they are now. They started with just this little company that did Toy Story. So obviously, they're doing something right. Why do you think, Tammy, you can start us off, why do you think people love Pixar in particular so much?
I think generally because the stories are better. They're not like, you can say, oh, animation is just for kids, because everyone always says, oh, it's an animation movie, I'll take the kids. But it's honestly geared for adults so they can stay awake. It's really good stories, and they're not afraid to hit subjects that are a little like, that will like make you think and maybe make you cringe a little bit. They go for it, and so that way the adult who pays for it can enjoy it, and the kids just doesn't care because they just see animated people. So it's all good. It works for both. So I think it's mainly primarily the storyline.
And joining us for our Battle Royale, and she can chime in now, is Amanda Sink.
Hey guys and lady, Amanda, so nice to talk to a lady on here.
Why do you think people love Pixar, Amanda?
Pixar is like the evolution of cartoons. I mean, if you think about what kids way back when used to grow up with, it was more like illustration cartoons.
I don't have to think about it. I lived it. I can actually reflect.
All right. Well, for others who haven't, I was actually having this conversation today, and I feel like Pixar is the cartoons in a modern day age, but they also bring very emotionally driven stories that have a perspective for the children and for the adults, which is what Tamla was already talking about. And they do it in a way that feels different from other movies. It doesn't feel like a typical love story, or doesn't feel like a typical family drama. It hits you in a different way. And I don't really know what exactly it is about it that emotionally hits you differently, but it breaks down all of those barriers for you. And I think part of it is because you're not expecting it to be that raw and that emotional and that deep, but they often are, even though on the surface they don't appear to be that way.
Mm. I don't consider this to be, it's a form of animation. As a person who did a lot of studying for this sort of thing, it is a different form of animation. Whether it's better or not isn't really the question, but what they did though is find a way to legitimize animation for everybody. They do tell stories better and clearer, and they come in with a thesis, and they answer that thesis by the end of the movie. That's what they really execute the best at, because anyone can do a 3D movie and anyone can do a computer animated movie. Anyone can make an animation, but if they're not telling the right story, who gives a crap? Mm-hmm. And I think that's what Pixar really does the best.
My opinion, my take is that Pixar does what every other studio, what Disney used to do with their hand-drawn animation, which is they create a story, it's a cartoon, it's for kids in concept, but they always make enough of an element for adults. They're trying to hit every quadrant. They're not just trying to hit the kids. They're not just trying to hit families. They actually want people that don't care about kids' movies. They don't care about cartoons. I don't watch cartoons that much, but I will watch a Pixar movie because I feel like I'm getting something with emotional depth, some heft to it. As well as it's fun. You know, they'll have the ancillary characters. They'll have the talking whatever, talking rodents or whatever the hell they have. They'll have all that, the stuff that people expect out of these kinds of movies, but they also are 100% on board with making sure everybody's going to have a great time when they walk out of the theater. That's what they deliver, and they deliver it time and time again. I don't know why more movie studios do not tighten their scripts up the way Pixar does, because they don't. I don't know if it's because John Lasseter's oversight, which is going away, so I hope that doesn't change. But they have really, really tight scripts. There's not a lot of fluff in their movies. They're all very smart, and they hit every quadrant. And I don't think people... Every other animation studio has been trying to replicate Pixar. Nobody can do it. They either try too hard to be
all inclusive.
Yeah, and they'll do like dirty jokes. That's not what Pixar does. I mean, they're like kids' movies. Then you'll find like a subtle penis joke. Yeah, that's not what Pixar does, man. They can find a way to do it without you going, "Hey, was that a penis joke?" They get around that. You know, they find a way to make this entertaining. And I just don't think any other studio could even come close at this point.
They do what every studio wants to do. And as you alluded to, has tried to do but has failed. They really do hit every single person that you could imagine has some sort of resonation with the story or even just the artwork that is on display for you. So everybody can connect it to it in some way. And that's what every, like not even just animated film studios, but every film studio is trying to do, is to hit as many people as possible. And that's what Pixar does. And they do it well. And they do it every single time. Except for maybe Incredibles, that's debatable.
Ooh.
Shots fired.
So many people want to punch you in the face right now.
I know.
Without that, let's get into it. This is our Pixar Movie Battle Royale. Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for the Hollywood Outsider Movie Battle Royale. That is where we take 8 films, 2 favorites from each of our hosts, and we determine which one is the ultimate greatest film in the entire whole universe. The rules are simple. We break it down to Ho North and Ho South, and basically each person presents their films. And we bring in our guest judge, who will help us make the determination of what is ultimately going to make it to the final round to vie for the title of the greatest in the whole universe. It is definitely a lot of fun, and it is time to get to it. Let's decide what is the greatest film of its genre. It's time for the Movie Battle Royale.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the main event. Let's get ready to rumble!
Y'all ready for this? All right, we're going to start with Ho North, and that's myself and Amanda, and I get to start. Now, basically how this works, we have 8 movies. We're going to get down to 1 by the end of it. And it starts with me and my first 2 picks, and then we're going to vote and go on. My first movie is Up.
See these? These are my Wilderness Explorer badges. You may notice one is missing.
It's my Assisting the Elderly badge.
If I get it, I will become a Senior Wilderness Explorer.
The wilderness must be explored! Go, go!
It's going to be great. There's a big ceremony, and all the dads come, and they pin on our badges.
So, you want to assist an old person?
Yep. Then I'll be a senior wilderness explorer.
You ever heard of a snipe?
Snipe?
Bird. Beady eyes. Every night it sneaks in my yard and gobbles my poor azaleas. I'm elderly and infirm. I can't catch it. If only someone could help me.
Me! I'll do it!
Oh, I don't know. It's awfully crafty. You'd have to clap your hands 3 times to lure it in.
I'll find them, Mr. Fredrickson.
I think it's burrows 2 blocks down.
Up opens with, in my opinion, the greatest scene in animation history. As we watch Carl and Ellie's ups and downs as they... I didn't even realize I did that. As a couple dreaming to one day visit Paradise Falls. As happens, life gets in the way and Ellie passes away before they even have that opportunity. After many years of being a grumpy gills, Carl finds himself evicted from his own home and decides to use the balloons that he's been dreaming of doing this. He basically creates a hot air balloon to carry him the distance needed to finally take that vacation for both himself and for Ellie. A small scout named Russell kind of accidentally stows away, and we are treated to numerous adventures before the film is over, and he reaches his destination, and you get a whole heartfelt adventure. Up won Best Animated Feature and Score, and over $700 million worldwide at the box office. It is also, on a more personal level, that rare animated film that will bring me to tears almost instantly. The love story between Carl and Ellie, to me, is more moving than most live-action love stories. I really feel like those opening minutes are done in a way that I've never seen animation do ever, and rarely have I seen live action do. People always talk about The Notebook brings them to cry and movies like that. No. Up will, that feels like a genuine, real relationship. They have real hardships. They really go through, I mean, it's like 5 minutes, and they go through an entire lifetime of trials and errors. You feel for Carl, his love and loss. You understand where he is in the world. And Up takes us on this beautiful ride that covers a lot of bases. Your hero is a grumpy old bastard. I mean, really, he is. And we love him. Most importantly, that love between him and Ellie never truly dies. And it also kind of enforces that you should never put off chasing your dreams. It's a beautiful movie. My second movie is Inside Out.
Riley, if you don't eat your dinner, you're not going to get any dessert.
Wait, did he just say we couldn't have dessert?
That's anger. Cares very deeply about things being fair.
So that's how you want to play it, old man? No dessert? Oh, sure. We'll eat our dinner right after you eat this.
Right, right. Here comes an airplane.
Oh, airplane. We got an airplane, everybody.
Now, Inside Out revolves around Riley Anderson, who at the age of 11 is forced to move from Minnesota to San Francisco. Riley is struggling with her changes, you know, from going from one area of the country to another. And inside her head, we follow her five key emotions as they deal with it. Joy, anger, fear, disgust, and sadness. Riley's behavior begins to change as sadness creeps in, putting all the other emotions on this adventure to stabilize her mind before there's no coming back. And then there's that side story with old imaginary friend Bing Bong.
Aww.
It also won for Best Animated Picture and grossed over $850 million worldwide. So why do I love Inside Out? I love the complexities of psychology more than I would like to admit. How every minute detail affects the human mind and how emotions complement our core. And especially how each one are necessary to mental health and mental growth. So it specifically points out in a world consumed with never hurting anybody's feelings, ever, the importance of sadness as a component to your very well-being. It's very important to our overall structure of mental health. And the movie really enforces that in a super smart way. It's a very bold statement for a family film to me. It's also a cartoon. And Inside Out is probably the closest I've seen outside of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest to showcasing exactly how mental health works. It's fun, it's entertaining, it's intellectually insightful in a way very few animated films have ever come close to achieving. For me, it's a beautifully made film filled with heart and intelligence and something every single kid should watch with their parents, and those parents should then talk to them. I really believe that.
Those were incredible synopses. Synopses?
Yeah, man. I think stuff out.
Yeah,
stupid
man.
Stupid conjugation course.
I know. All in words and all
so many
jazz.
Words.
All right. So I'm going to take a vote. My two picks, Up and Inside Out. I'm going to go to you, Tammy. You're our guest. So if you had to pick, which you do, what is the preferred movie of those two, Inside Out or Up? What's your choice?
I'm going to choose Up because you reminded me how much that those first 5 minutes. I'm about to cry because I remember, and I'm like, I don't want to cry on the podcast. And I remember that, and it was just so intense for me that I had to walk out the room because I was watching it at home. It was so emotional. I remember that, and Up. I choose Up.
All right, Amanda, what's your pick? Up and Inside Out.
So while I believe that Up is an emotionally driven film and has one of the best love scenes, relationships ever depicted on screen, they are perfect.
Feels like we're going another way, though.
We might be.
Okay.
Because I feel like Up is limited to that beginning scene. Now, while it continues to draw that throughout the rest of the film, there's not as many memorable moments in the movie. It's really that beginning scene. Mm-hmm. And also the ending. It's very strong, and I love that movie so, so much. But Inside Out has a story that makes me want to revisit it over and over again. It has a conversation and a dialogue that I want to engage in over and over again. And it has a lot of emotion itself, it just in a different way. This is more about a family connection than it is a love connection. And so I'm going to go with Inside
Chuck
Out.
Chuck Woolery just popped in my head. 2 and 2. Sorry. All right, so Inside Out. So Johnny, you're the tiebreaker, the deal maker. What's it going to be?
So I'm going to have to go with Up. Up's, Up's the movie of these two. If I were to rely strictly on my memory, what are these two movies? What's the story in them? I would remember more about Up than I would Inside Out. It had more of a lasting effect on me. Yes, that first 5 minutes made me have feelings to the point where I needed the tissues, a hug. I needed to take a break for about a day or two. I needed to come back and say, all right, now I'm ready. And I was still a little shaky after what happened in the first 5 minutes. It was a powerful moment, and I will give it credit for that. And throughout the rest of the story, because Up is really more about somebody learning to love somebody but carry on. And I appreciate that aspect of it.
All right. Up moves on. And now we come to Amanda. What are your two films?
My descriptions are not as incredible as Aaron's.
Obviously.
Don't worry. Nobody's are.
I know. I'm feeling a little like underprepared or underwhelmed here. So my,
you know, you're supposed to be able to sell it like it's the best movie of all time. And if you just got
that's
like,
why you go into sales. Hello, I work right? in a law firm.
You know, if you just show up and you're like, hey, it's good. I dig it.
No, yeah. I have my own description for it, well, but you sold it.
Give it your best. Your
my
college
first
try.
One. Yeah. My first.
Let's have a lot more discussion about this before we actually dig into it.
What just happened?
I had two beers.
Go ahead, Amanda. Let's go.
So the first one is Toy Story.
Well, if you hadn't shown up your stupid little cardboard spaceship and taken away everything that was important to me.
Don't talk to me about importance. Because of you, the security of this entire universe is in jeopardy.
What? What are you talking about?
Right now, poised at the edge of the galaxy, Emperor Zurg has been secretly building a weapon with the destructive capacity to annihilate an entire planet. I alone have information that reveals this weapon's only weakness. And you, my friend, are responsible for delaying my rendezvous with Star Command!
You are a toy! You weren't the real Buzz Lightyear, you're an action figure! You are a child's plaything!
You are a sad, strange little man, and you have my pity.
I feel like I don't really need to go into the story of what Toy Story is about in terms of the actual description of the film. I feel like you should know it.
Probably.
But basically, this is a movie that takes a real life individual, a human person, Andy, and his toys come to life. And he engages with them. He interacts with them as if they're other people, that as if they're his friends. He treats them as if they're his friends. And they treat each other as if they're family. And they treat Andy as if he is their parent, but also their brother, but also their son. There's so many intermingling like family connections in this movie. And the way that it executes it, I think for that time when it came out in the 90s, it really just grasped onto both child and adult like to want to know more and to see your toys in a different way that you never would have mm-hmm. if it wasn't for Toy Story. If I look at a toy now, it's totally different. I think about like
it's alive.
Maybe I hurt its feelings when I stepped on its foot. I don't know. Like there's so a cute weird. Dinosaur. Mm-hmm. And now when you think of like those Jurassic Park toys, it's around that time. So you have all of those things that are going through kids' minds and adults' minds of this could be real, but also shows you the true meaning of friendship. And that is really where this story is bonded on mm-hmm. is that. And I feel like there's almost no film in general out there that depicts a better friendship than those toys do with each other and with their owner, Andy. So Toy Story is the first one.
All right. See, that was good. That wasn't, I mean, it wasn't quite my level, but, you know, it was good. It was good.
No, you, like, threw in, like, how much money it made and how many, like, Oscar wins, and I feel like I should have done that.
I'm trying to win. I didn't know.
You know?
Right? To be fair, you can't really lose with your two choices either, though. Up and Inside Out are solid.
Well, apparently you can lose with one of them.
That's your fault. You set the format. So the second one is A Bug's Life.
Now let me tell you how things are supposed to work. The sun grows the food, the ants pick the food, the grasshoppers eat the food.
And the birds eat the grasshoppers. Hey, like the one that nearly ate you, you remember? You remember? Oh, you should have seen it. Okay? This blue jay, he has him halfway down his throat, okay? And Hopper's kicking and screaming, okay? And I'm scared. Okay, I'm not going anywhere near, okay? Oh, come on! It's a great story! Ow.
I swear, if I hadn't promised Mother on her deathbed that I wouldn't kill you, I would kill you!
And believe me, no one appreciates that more than I do. Shut up!
Now, this one, I think, is a little underwhelming for people in general. A lot of people don't rush out to go watch it if they didn't see it when it came out. I watched it on VHS way too many times. I bought it on Blu-ray because I love to watch this movie. But this is a bug movie, but not in a gross way. And I'm saying this as somebody who can't handle bugs in real life or anything on screen. I don't even like ants. But this is a story about ants building a friendship together, working together, because there's one guy in all of them who keeps messing everything up. He doesn't mean to mess everything up, but he just keeps doing it. Mm-hmm. And so he has to find a way to rectify this, to save basically his entire colony. Their food is depleting. They need to this master, essentially, replenish all of that. And he has to work on his own within himself and find a way to overcome the internal issues that a lot of people face on a regular basis of, I keep failing. I feel like I can't do this anymore. Like, I'm not going to be able to get this. And that's a personal stride you have to overcome. And children and adults, again, with Pixar, they can resonate with this. They understand. They've been through this. They feel it on some level or another. And A Bug's Life really encapsulates that. It also has some of the best witty dialogue for a kids movie. I love the dialogue in this movie. Mm-hmm. There's just so many good aspects to it. And I think because it's so underappreciated, makes it even more special to me. So that's why I put A Bug's Life in here. And if you haven't seen it, please, please, please go watch it. I'm sure it's not on streaming anywhere, but it's worth the purchase.
It might be on Netflix because they've got a deal with Disney. I don't know if that's one of them that's on there or not.
I don't remember.
Coco is on there. I just watched Coco. So many colors.
So beautiful. So, between those two options, Toy Story and A Bug's Life, where are you going with this, Johnny?
Easy. A Bug's Life.
Really?
I love that one so much more than Toy Story. I enjoy Toy Story, and it's a great movie. However, A Bug's Life really has some of the best uses of its characters. Like, it's got the best use of Dennis Leary on screen ever. And I that's the one movie of the two where I will sit down and watch as many times as possible. I do adore that movie, and I just think it's great. I think it's beautiful, and I think that the world that they create is a much more real world than Toy Story does.
It is real. It does feel real. It feels like they're people, not bugs. Maybe that's why I can handle it. Aaron, what are you going with?
Well, all that stuff was nice and super. It's not Toy Story to me. Woody and Buzz, the movie created the computer animation genre all by itself. It's kind of hard to discount that in my book.
See, this is what you're here for, to sell it for me.
No, I mean, you really can't discount it, Johnny. It's the first one, and it was a big hit, and it kind of built Pixar. Without it, you don't have Pixar.
This brings me back to the Lord of the Rings argument, and I'm not going to let it go, so now Johnny has to agree.
What's that?
Because the heist episode that you guys did, he argued that because Lord of the Rings initiated that CGI, mm-hmm. even though the Planet of the Apes did much better with it, he was like, you can't discount that Lord of the Rings came first, so they initiated it, so they get the credit.
Ooh.
Boom.
Wow, somebody's been paying attention and taking notes.
Drop the mic.
Pixar did not initiate the computer animated feature.
It was the first hit computer animated feature. It was, too. It was Pixar's first, for sure.
It was Pixar. Yeah, you said it right there. It was Pixar's first hit animation feature. It was not the first animation feature.
Sparky, I said that, and I was saying this is a Pixar movie battle royale. This basically elevated the computer animation genre. Did go look at your history books. Completely built Pixar, and without this movie, there is no Pixar. So you don't have Up or Bug's Life or Coco or whatever other possible films there are to come. So I will say, Toy Story.
I did not mean for this to get sassy.
you're right that this elevated Pixar. You're right about that.
Yeah, I'm right about everything else too.
And, oh my gosh,
I'm just over here drinking my beer.
Anyway, and Toy Story, just as a movie. I mean, I really don't think if you're talking about the greatest movies in Pixar's history, you can't discount the one that built the ship, and it built the ship. It's the movie that really steamrolled the computer animation genre. It really built Pixar, et cetera, et cetera. And it's a great film. Now, it's 20-plus years ago.
It came out in
1985, I think it's already said. So it's old. I mean, I get it. It's not the animation state of the art now, but the characters still hold up. I still love that friendship. I think it's beautiful. Toy Story.
They've also brought it back to life numerous times and even recently. And it's still, I think I cried more in the third one than I did the first one. Anyway, Tammy.
But I kind of like John's bashing because we don't normally get that kind of bashing.
But that was very sassy. I had to take a deep breath and step away because I felt a little guilty for initiating it.
Bring the thunder.
Just eat popcorn and watch.
Yeah. Amen. Can we get some cheddar cheese for this?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, okay. I guess. You get to continue.
Tammy, what's your vote? Because now you're the tiebreaker.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So 1995. It was 19. Glorious, glorious time. I took my nephew to go see Toy Story. And I paid for it all by myself and took him on a bus ride. And that's probably it's the memory I have with Toy Story is me and my nephew Paris going to go see this movie, and I can't ever erase that. Aww. So I'm going to go with Toy Story.
Oh, that's sweet. You're going to make us cry like we did in Up.
That was really well Sorry. Done. I don't even care about the company history anymore.
You built it up.
You're making me cry.
Well, that's it. Toy Story moves on.
All right. Toy Story carries on. So now we've got two from the north. So now we go to Ho South.
All right.
All right. So Sassy Pants, let's go to John.
All right, so the very first contender that I bring you is Brave.
Just listen!
I am the queen. You listen to me.
Oh, this is so unfair.
Unfair?
You're never there for me. This whole marriage is what you want. Do you ever bother to ask what I want? No. You walk around telling me what to do, what not to do, trying to make me be like you. Well, I'm not going to be like you.
Oh, you're acting like a child.
And you're a beast! That's what you are!
Merida!
I'll never be like
you! No, stop that!
I'd rather die than be like you!
So back in 2012, when I would watch every single trailer to a movie that would come out, I was trying to get an idea as to what was coming out from Pixar that year, and Brave is what it was. Now, the thing that I thought was very interesting was that in the trailers, they didn't give you a clue as to what the story was. They just showed you something beautiful and then the red hair, and that's about it. I thought that was interesting, but at the same time, it almost told me not to go see this movie, but I wanted to see what it was because it's Pixar. By this time, Pixar has already proven it's their 13th movie. It's already proven that they can do something great. Why would they fail now? So imagine my surprise when I finally sit down and I discover that one, it's Pixar's first feature film with a female protagonist as the center of the story. Two, the female protagonist, her story isn't about her falling in love, some guy rescuing her, any of these things. It's really more of a story about a relationship between a mother and a daughter. And I thought that was a beautiful story to tell in these sorts of media. So that being said, the movie through its entirety survives Bechdel test, which I think is a very cool feature to this whole thing of a movie from Pixar. Not only did it survive the Bechdel test, but it also did win the Academy Award, the Golden Globe, the BAFTA Awards, all for those years for the feature film section. And I just think that this, like, it's got such a beautiful world to it. It's got a beautiful feel. The voice actors always did a fantastic job, and I love the character design to this. They did a really good job. And if I don't know if you guys noticed, but something that Pixar didn't do for quite a while, it took them up until Incredibles, but they didn't show you very many shots of actual people moving. And part of it was because they were waiting for the technology to keep up, catch up to what the stories they wanted to tell. And just imagine that hair and animating that hair just right.
Yeah.
And I just think it's beautiful for so many different levels for that reason.
So you've daydreamed about this hair.
Sounds like
it. I love that hair.
Yeah.
That hair was a character all on its own.
It is very flowy and beautiful.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. It looks great. Looks like hair.
Aaron, being the stereotypical man, it's hair. It's there.
I mean, it looks like hair. It looks better than Jamie Lee Curtis's hair. Let me tell you that.
Oh, no. The wig.
So then we're going to follow this up with my next movie, which happens to be Pixar's 9th feature film, WALL-E.
Otto, things have changed. We've got to go back.
Sir, orders are, do not return to Earth.
But life is sustainable now. Look at this plant. Green and growing. It's living proof he was wrong.
Irrelevant, Captain.
What? It's completely relevant. Out there is our home. Home, Otto. And it's in trouble. I can't just sit here and do nothing. That's all I've ever done. That's all anyone in this blasted ship has ever done. Nothing.
On the axiom, you will survive.
I don't want to survive. I want to live.
Must follow my directive.
Duh!
WALL-E kind of gives me one of the scariest scenes in a movie that I've ever seen, which is when we see those people in the hover round chairs, just drinking those shakes and doing nothing but social media and talking on the phone, all that other crap. And when I look around the world and I realize that's where we're heading, that scares the crap out of me. It's one of the reasons why I spend so much time going to gyms and playing outside, because it's probably going to go away soon. But one of the things you'll notice about WALL-E is that there's not an overwhelming amount of dialogue. You have a character that really kind of just says his own name, and you have another character that shows up that kind of says her own name, and they do a wonderful job of telling you a love story by showing it to you. And that's something I think films seem to forget that they can do. They can show you everything versus having to tell you the story. There's not a lot of dialogue, and you don't have to really worry about it. And it's much more engaging, much more enveloping, and it causes people to engage with it more. I just think that that is a more beautiful story than some of the other ones we've had to deal with. And I think that it just does a wonderful job of putting us in that world. But you don't have to take my word for it, because that year in 2008, it won the Golden Globe for Best Animated Feature, the Hugo Award for Long Dramatic Presentation. It won the final Nebula Award for Best Script, the Saturn Award for Best Animated Film, the Academy Award for Best Animated Feature. I mean, the list goes on. It's the 21st century 29th film that you have to see, according to 117th critics around the world. I think that speaks volumes for how wonderful this movie really is. So, all that being said, Aaron, of these two movies, Brave or WALL-E, which one's your favorite?
WALL-E had better hair. So, I really do like Brave. I feel like I enjoy it for the story it was telling as opposed to the story it told, if that makes sense. I really feel like it does a good job. I don't think it does a great job, but it has a great message. So
Brave does?
Yeah, Brave does. It has a great message about independence and, you know, women forcing their daughters to kind of, actually any child, to kind of go along with whatever their dreams are or their plans are. And it's really an interesting tale. It's not WALL-E. WALL-E takes, God, I think it was like 2 hours. I think it was a longer animated feature than typical. And for me personally, I would say that the storytelling was just unique and that there isn't much dialogue and the film still works for me. Now, it's closer than probably the other ones, but I would go with WALL-E.
Okay. Tammy?
I'm going with Brave because I hated WALL-E. Thank you.
Okay.
Oh, thank God. I'm so relieved. I knew I was going to get tomatoes thrown at me at this point, but I'm so glad I'm not alone. Because I'm choosing Brave too. Wally was like a snooze fest for me, and I'm so sorry. I know that Lady Ho, Angela Wallach, is going to yell at me, and many others alike are throwing, they're cursing at their radio, their internet radio.
Who cares what people think? If it's your opinion, it's your opinion.
It is my opinion. I understand why it's so appreciated in its art form, but I think it's just boring. And I feel so bad to say that, but I really did fall asleep numerous times trying to watch it.
I could see that, actually. I could.
It's so difficult.
It's more of an art film than it is a it great is. Story.
So I appreciate that, but that doesn't make it an overall great movie to me, and definitely not one of the best in Pixar. So I have to go with Brave. I also kind of feel like Brave is like the Buffy of Pixar. Because of that.
I did not see this going this way.
I'm so sorry. I know you saw Wally.
I'm actually really happy that everyone went with, I mean, but I love both these movies, of Pixar's movies, that when I got to make my choices, these are the ones that I was happy that I got to make. And I did not think Brave was going to go as far as it seems like it's going to go. So that's nice.
Yeah. Yay. Girl power.
Yeah, ladies. Yes. What up?
High five. What's up?
Virtual high five.
All right. Well, Tammy, you get to bring this home. So you've got your two movies. What are they?
Okay. So Cows in the House. Listen, I don't have those long intros like you guys. So I'm going to make this quick and brief. You're going to love it. No problem. Okay. We're going to start with Coco.
Mira. They're setting up for tonight. The music competition for Dia de Muertos. You want to be like your hero? You should sign up.
My family would freak.
Look, if you're too scared, then, well, have fun making shoes. Come on, what did De La Cruz always say?
Seize your moment.
Show me what you got, muchacho. I'll be your first audience.
Miguel!
Abuelita!
What are you doing here?
Leave my grandson alone.
Doña, please. I was just getting a shine.
I know your tricks, mariachi. What did he say to you?
He was just showing me his guitar.
Shame on you.
Coco is basically about a young kid who wants to play music, but his family is so against it. And he has one night where it's the Day of the Dead, and he somehow gets trapped on the other side. And it takes you through this tale of the family, and it hit me in a way I did not expect to hit. I can't tell you where I was at when I watched this movie, but I was in public and I cried so hard. Normally when I cry, especially when I'm like in public, I'm very silent and I'm like, I kind of take a deep breath and I'm cool. Someone came to ask me a question, someone I knew, and I started bawling harder. And when I cry, I'm not pretty. I ugly cried no matter what I do. And I started like, and it was very embarrassing, but at the same time, I didn't care. This movie was so beautiful. It made me appreciate stories my dad loves to tell about whatever. You know, it made me like be very patient with my parents. When my mom wants to reminisce about whatever, it made me patient. And then it made me realize I won't hear stories from my grandparents. And then it just made me realize this movie is about remembering and honoring your dead loved ones. And okay, I'm gonna get choked up. Sorry. it just makes you realize that love them and then remember them. And I felt so many emotions that I wasn't planning to feel, especially with an animation movie, but that's Pixar for you. They touched on something that's really hard for me, and that's dealing with death. And it was, I don't want to say it was traumatic, but it was eye-opening, and it made me think. It taught me patience. Just be a little bit more patient with those who are trying to tell a story, because they want you to remember and to tell that story again. So that's Coco for you. Nice. My next pick is The Incredibles.
Isn't that my decision?
Do you remember Thunderhead? Tall, storm powers. Nice man. Good with kids.
Listen.
November 15th to 58. All was well, another day saved, when his cape snagged on a missile pin.
Thunderhead was not the brightest bulb.
Stratogale. April 23rd, 57. Cape caught in a jet turbine.
You can't generalize about this.
Metaman, express elevator, diner guy, snag on takeoff, splashdown, sucked into a vortex. No capes.
The Incredibles, I did not want to watch. I'm not good with animation, FYI. But my best friend said, "You're to watch this, and I'll buy you dinner." I was poor. I said, okay. But it was the superhero movie I was craving. This is before, this is like in 2004. This is before Iron Man, all this stuff. It was everything. I was like, first I was on my couch. Then I was on my little bouncy ball in front of the TV. Because once I get on the bouncy ball in front of the TV, I'm invested. And I was like, this movie is so amazing. And she was like, "Oh, you get dessert with your dinner because you liked it too." It was so good. It was everything that I was like, this is what a superhero movie should be. And people need to do that. And thank God Marvel said, yes, we're going to do the same thing. And it was. And it to me, that was my first superhero movie. It just kept going. And so whenever I think of this movie, I'm always just so... yes. And so now there's a part two. I'm like, okay, I can get with it. It created something that I don't think people realize they want it or need it. And people have been clamoring for 15. I don't do math very well, even though I'm an accountant, for 14, 15 years. And they still want more. And because it's just been so silent. So I think, because it just generated something. So the beauty of part two is that you have kids who were kids at that time. Now they have kids of their own. And it's just this great story. And I just, Sam Jackson, Nelson T, or Craig T. Nelson, who you don't expect to be good sometimes. He was great. And I'm like, I love this movie. So those are my two picks. So since I lost my thought, Amanda, who do you pick, Coco or The Incredibles?
Coco, every day, all damn day. This film, yes. Seriously, and listening to you reminisce about your experience with it and all the touch points that you went on, especially about how it touched on death in a way that a lot of animated films obviously aren't touching on, and it makes you think about it, and that was amazing. Mm-hmm. And it makes you, when you watch it, you appreciate a culture, because I'm not Hispanic. I don't have that tie to that culture. I don't have that deep understanding of it, the way that this movie represented it. It's also pure beauty. And I cannot Yes. say how beautiful it is. I typically do not like 3D movies, and I saw this in 3D, and I did not regret a single second. I saw it at home. I've seen it a couple of times at home, and it is just not the same as watching it 3D in the theater. It was worth a 30-minute yes. Frozen mini movie ahead of time because it was so good. And it's not even just that there's a lot of colors. It's the depth of colors. It's the way that everything flows on the screen. It's the story. It's the emotions. It's the grandma. Like, the grandma, gets my soul. And she's so sweet. And then when she thinks that she's remembering him or that he's there, it's, oh man, it just gets into your soul.
Yes.
It's so emotional. I'm gonna start crying. Right? So Coco wins for me, even if you had put this against a movie that I did like, because I don't like The Incredibles, but it still would win for me because it's that good. It's that, and I think it's more than just the emotion. It is everything. It is yes. one of the best movies in general that I've seen in so many years.
Yay. Thank you. Now, John, Johnny, mm-hmm, Jonathan, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, darling, mm-hmm. Tell me, who do you choose?
My choice is going to surprise people, I think.
Not really, but go on.
It's going to be Coco.
Okay, I am surprised.
I like The Incredibles. The Incredibles is great. It's a fun movie and all that other stuff. But I feel I feel adjacently connected to Coco, and I really love the kind of story it was telling. And it's a prettier movie to look at. It's got a good enough story to support the fact that it's just as good of a story as what we get in Incredibles. So we got that. It's got, as far as the design of the characters themselves, yeah, that's fine. But there's just something more about Coco where it elevates the amount of thought put into each and every feature, each and every character, how much research they looked at for different sorts of animals and how people from Mexico do what they do. There's just so much more thought put into it, and it has the life, light, and liveliness and color that I would come to expect from something that has that sort of feeling. So that's why Coco gets it.
Thank you. I agree with everything you said. Aaron.
Yeah.
Your choice.
Doesn't really matter what
Come
I
on.
Think. But I will clean sweep it, because as someone, I'm very steeped in Hispanic culture because it's part of my family. And I will tell you that Coco is so good. You guys have already talked about the colors and you've talked about the music. What you haven't talked about is the nod to Hispanic culture, that it's dripping from every single pore, and all that stuff is factual. Even the grandma ruling the family, that's a thing. That's totally a thing in Hispanic culture. And so many of the things where the kid can't play music because they forbid music, and then people are like, well, that's just ridiculous. It's not. Go meet a Hispanic family, especially old world Hispanics, mm-hmm. and it's very prominent in their family. That's just how you are, because there's a level, and a lot of people aren't going to understand this, because we live in a culture where people are very independent. People are very headstrong, and that's a great thing. Hispanic culture, I have found to be of a more respectful of your elders culture than any other one that mm-hmm. I've encountered personally, including my own. They have a really deep-rooted respect for their family, and it's just something. Well, John, you can attest. You're part Hispanic, I guess. Not a guess. You are. So you can attest that, you know, everything I'm saying, you know, of course the white guy's saying it, he's probably like, yeah, I get it, honky. but to me,
you know me, I keep it on the down low.
Yeah,
you
know, I know. But for me, that, because I've seen it so much and I've always been on the opposite end, because, you know, I'm not personally Hispanic, it's amazing to see that brought to film, because I don't think it's ever done very well in film. It's usually like Desperado or something like that, where it's cool, but that's not really Hispanic culture. That's more like badass movie with some accents, you know, and it's just not the same thing.
This shined like a beautiful light on it.
Yeah, they find a way, some of those other movies are describing, to make it look dirty, and mm-hmm. this doesn't make anything look dirty. However, I do have to say, like, the use of the chancleta in this one is, it was perfect.
The what? Can you just say that again for me?
Like the grandmother with the shoe, like mm-hmm. how she's a ninja, all of a sudden throwing, like in a second, she got the shoe in her hand. That's like, which is a chancleta. It's a thing. You don't worry about the hand. You don't worry about a stick. You worry about the shoe.
Yeah. That's one of the few words I know in Spanish, and it's chocolate. When you say, I was like, yeah, the shoe is right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we got it. We got our final four. Yay. Yeah. So you guys ready to break this down to
No,
one?
It's going
to
hurt my soul. This is a tough battle.
This is, which is how it should be. This is how it should be.
Right.
All right.
This,
so
it's not so clear cut.
No, it's not. There's actually a couple ways it can go. And I'm actually already debating some choices. So we go to Whole North. Now, remember, if there's any ties, because there's four of us for this part, we will decide those ties based on what the listeners picked in the Facebook poll. We put a poll in Facebook, and we asked those listeners there. So if there's a tie, that's what we'll go to make that decision. Everybody understand?
Understood.
Yes.
Signed in blood.
All right.
Yeah, sure.
Whole North.
I have enough blood left.
Yeah, Whole North. We have Up versus Toy Story. You don't have to really give too long of an explanation, but if you want, you can. So Up versus Toy Story. Amanda, what's your pick for
Toy
those?
Toy Story.
Okay. Over Up. All right. Interesting. See where we're going. John, I kind of know where you're going, so we might as well get this one out of the way.
Up.
It's about what I felt. You know, he sounded just like Carl.
he's the old grumpy bastard that we love.
I think so.
Yeah.
All right, Tammy, what are you picking on those two? Up versus Toy Story?
Toy Story. Ooh. That's me.
Wait, that means two. Man.
Now you got to decide.
I really wanted it to be a slam dunk.
Maybe next round.
No, Up is a more beautiful film to me, but I feel Toy Story is a more important film in Pixar's history. And unlike John, I'm going to stick by my argument. So.
What?
Oh my God, don't bring it up again.
I'm just kidding. I honestly will.
Get popcorn. It'll be fine. Don't worry. Just watch it.
No, I would go with Toy Story. I think Toy Story is a marvelous film and it should win. So, Toy Story.
They're both equally great choices,
though. No, they are. You can't go wrong.
I mean, seriously.
It's just voting against yourself always gives you a little pause. Like, meh.
Yeah.
All right. So Toy Story moves on to the final round. Now we go to the other one, which is Brave versus Coco. John?
This one's tougher for me.
Yeah, I just went through it. I get it. Going against yourself
really
sucks.
Tough.
Yeah.
I'm going to go, and it's for completely like weird reasons, but trust me, it's not because it's my choice, but I'm going to go with Brave.
Okay. Tammy?
See, I'm going with Coco.
Amanda?
For obvious reasons.
Amanda?
As much as I want Brave to be this, because I want there to be like a wonderful female representation independent, like John went through all of those, I don't feel like it lived up to the same appreciation that Coco did for its culture that Brave was trying to do with women. Mm-hmm. I respect both of them for the messages they were trying to send, but Coco seriously wins on every front for me. I don't know how to draw hair, so like, I guess it's more fascinating for John because he has an appreciation for art. I don't know.
Hey, that red hair is amazing, really.
That red hair is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I'm going to go with Coco.
I'm going with Coco as well. So it's Coco versus Toy Story. Oh, it's the new versus the old.
This is tragic.
This is rough. This is going to be a little bit more difficult. So I think everybody's gone first except Tammy. Tammy, between Coco and Toy Story, what's your pick for Pixar's greatest film of all time?
Oh, you want me to choose between my nephew and a memory? Okay. I wasn't expecting this. And the beer's making me sad. Okay. Hold on. My voice is too high. Okay, so I'm going to go with Coco. It resonates with me more so than Toy Story. I love Toy Story. I can watch anytime. But Coco is dealing with something it deals with stuff that I'm dealing with now, and I'm going to go with Coco.
All right. Well, it sounds like you're beating things because you're so...
Do you have a punching bag next to you?
She's like, I going against my memories.
Her nephew. Actually,
it was just a pin off the top of a paper. Sorry.
Let's make it more dramatic. You're punching yourself in the leg.
Yes, I'm punching my leg and I'm making bruises to remember things by. That's what I was truly doing, but I didn't want to be all weird, you know, that girl.
Understood. Amanda?
This is terrible. I did not sign up for this. I mean, it really does. This is a hard decision. Coco, I feel like, is what the Hispanic culture needed and in the perfect way. And I feel like it was such a perfect movie. But Toy Story started so much more. And it's given me characters that I can love for many, many years longer that I've grown attached to. And I have my own personal memories seeing Toy Story in the theater. I think I'm going to have to go with Toy Story just because that's where it started for me.
All right. I'm going with Toy Story as well for many reasons. One being that's one of the few computer animated movies I still would watch. You know, I mean, a lot of times I'll watch them and go, all right, and then never watch it again. That's the exception. And I've already talked about the other reasons.
That
why.
Friendship, though.
It really feels real to me. Feels real to me.
They felt like your friends.
But I will tell you, that's the closest of any of the decisions that we've had from all of these.
Yeah, this one was brutal.
Yeah, for me. Because I really think Coco is a magnificent film, and maybe it's just too soon. like since the release. Maybe it'll hold up 20 years from now and be like, man, I wish I would have picked Coco.
Yeah, we should reevaluate this in the future.
Johnny?
Write this date down.
Where are you going?
Again, I'm just like you guys. I'm kind of torn. Do I go with the most recent film, which is an accumulation of tried and true methods that they've developed over the years? Do I choose the one that started everything off right?
And still holds up.
And I think, and as much as I like the story about friendship in Toy Story, and as much as I enjoy the story about family in Coco, God damn it. I'm trying to talk my way through this and I still can't pick one.
I know.
So here comes the coin and the flip is Toy Story.
Wow.
Ooh, didn't you?
I'm shocked. Did not actually expect that at all.
You voted against your heritage.
You voted damn against your own family.
Your own family, John.
Maybe. I mean,
no,
if you want to look at
for
it
you
that
at
way.
Christmas.
Can you just say shoe again for me real quick in Spanish?
All right. So first of all, it's not exactly shoe. It's actually like a sandal or a flip-flop or any of those things. Anything that's kind of a sort of shoe. It's called a chancleta.
It's just so fun to hear him say it.
All right. So we have a clear winner. And apparently, Tammy, you sacrificed your memory for nothing.
Great. Now I gotta go send my nephew like $50. Say I love you. Great. Thank you. I appreciate that.
All right. The winner is the greatest Pixar movie in all time is Toy Story.
That was beautiful.
What was that, Tammy, at the
Thank
jungle?
Thank you. I was serenading the section that we just, that Toy Story just won. That was me singing. Hello.
Why did it sound like Tarzan's yodel?
I got a mic in my hand and a beer in the other hand. What do you expect me to do?
Oh, my God.
It almost sounded like you were about to say, I got a microphone in my foot and a beer in my hand.
Oh, I started off really sober. I swear I did.
You know, I've been here the whole time. I don't buy it.
You don't buy what? I had the
exactly whatever you just said.
All right, let's move on to what our listeners picked. That is our top five from listener votes. Okay, from listener votes. Number five is WALL-E. Number four was Finding Nemo, which I actually kind of found
I love Finding
interesting
Nemo.
That nobody picked Finding Nemo as their final eight. Can anybody speak to why they didn't pick it when they were really thinking about it? Because it's just not a movie I really enjoy.
I had a fish like that and I didn't like it.
I think it's a great movie and I enjoy watching it, but I wouldn't say that it's a masterpiece. Whereas Toy Story, Coco, Up, these movies, Inside Out, these are masterpieces, not just in their genre, but of film in general.
Good answer.
Yeah. Something like that, but different.
Yeah. Number three is The Incredibles. Number two is Up, and which means maybe I should have voted a different way. I don't know. But number one, nope. Turns out I was right. Toy Story. That was the right call. Toy Story. Somebody's listening going, I listened to the whole thing, and it ended exactly where I thought it was going to end.
but they didn't
get our sort of our synopsis and our reasoning and our thoughts and our feelings. Exactly. That way they connected with us and they're like, you know, I'm right along with them, except for John, because he's a dick.
They also got your sassiness, which right. I think is the epitome of this entire episode.
Sassy.
And they got my drunk voice, so good.
They also got to hear you cry a little bit. So like, and hear amazing stories. Like you had the personal heartfelt stories and Aaron had the very beautiful technical explanations.
Hey, any compliment to me is a good day.
And John and I are just here for any attitude that needs to be thrown.
Right. I'm just here for sass.
That's what we love you.
All right. Well, Amanda, thanks for being here for this. We're going to move on to the next section.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to let you go.
Bye, Amanda.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
That means get out.
Bye.
All right. Now we're going to wrap this puppy up. Is there anything Tammy, you want to recommend that we haven't talked about in film or TVs or anything you've seen recently you want people to check out?
I was rewatching Crazy Head It's a TV show on Netflix. It's only one season, unfortunately, but it's a British TV show. It's probably about 8 episodes. It is about these girls who are like, they got some superpowers, like to see the future or something, like to see like vampires and whatever. And they're trying to solve a mystery about someone's heritage. It's actually kind of funny because they're so clumsy with killing people or or things. And it's just hilarious. And it's called Crazy Head. It's on Netflix, like 8 episodes. It's a really quick watch. And I think it's like if you just want to be mindless, go watch it.
Yeah, it's actually a pretty fun show. It's exactly the polar opposite of what Supernatural is. So instead of two guys, it's two girls. Instead of Americans, it's English. And instead of it being that they're really good at killing things, they're not at all.
Yeah, I loved every moment of it. It was just fun. I just like, oh, I missed them. I want them to do another season, but I don't think they listened to me.
Johnny, what about you? You saw Cloak and Dagger, right?
I'm kind of torn on how I feel because we're 2 episodes in, and I think there's a 3rd episode that I can watch now. I feel like by two episodes in, they're going to make me do the 3 episodes or ditch it rule that I have. It can go either way. It can be a really great show that fits in the same vein as some of the great Netflix shows, or they can really screw it up because it's Freeform.
Mm. Yeah, that's where I'm at. I'm like, please get better. I like it, but I'm not in love with it.
Right. It has the opportunity of being a really great show. It's just like and it feels like it was done by the same people who did the Netflix shows. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah, I get the same vibe. I hear you.
I don't have anything really new other than what we already talked about. But I will say I rewatched Silver Linings Playbook recently and I forgot how much I love that movie. Like
I still have not seen that.
Oh, it's so good. Watch it. Find it. Watch it. It's just.
I need to watch that.
Man, Bradley Cooper is so crazy.
What do you think of that A Star is Born trailer?
Loved it.
Yep.
Me too. Because I've seen it like not only online, but when I went to go see Ocean's 8, I was like, he's like the character I would love to write about. Like he's mm-hmm. broken and drunk and then there's a girl who just brings him to life. And the weird thing about Lady Gaga, she doesn't look like Lady Gaga. And so when she opened her mouth, I was like, ooh, that girl can sing. And I was like, that's Lady Gaga, idiot. But it was like you forgot who she was yes. because she didn't look like herself. And then you were always every time I see it, it never fails. I'm like, that woman can sing. She has such a beautiful voice.
She does.
And I cannot wait for that movie. And I wasn't planning to watch it.
Love that trailer. I remember seeing the original. I'm not a big fan of it, and a lot of people love that movie, but it's just okay. I love Bradley Cooper, and I probably wouldn't have watched the trailer if he wasn't in it because I didn't like the original. But she sold me. As much as I love Bradley Cooper, she sold me. And I know that she's always wanted to be an actress. I know she's done some stuff on TV and whatnot. I didn't even know who she was. Like, I didn't know who the actress was at first. And I'm like, she's great. And then at the end, it's like, Lady Gaga. I'm like, that's Lady Gaga? Because I've never seen her, and she's got, like, bling all over her face.
Yeah, yeah. She stripped down for this, and she's really just going on her talent. I'm like, mm-hmm. that girl has more than we anticipated. And if I'm not mistaken, someone correct me if I'm wrong, Bradley Cooper taught himself guitar for this movie.
That's what I heard. Yeah, that's what I heard.
Yeah, so I'm
He's directing it, too. He's directing it.
Listen, so. As someone who's been trying to teach herself guitar for, like, 7 years, that's some damn good talent because that's hard. And he plays it so well. Oh, my God, why isn't this movie out now?
You know what drives me crazy about Bradley Cooper is he's handsome, he's charming, he seems like a genuinely good guy, and he has talent coming out of his ass. So I hate him.
I know that bastard.
I know he's perfect.
That son of a bitch.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of annoying, man. Share it. Save some for the rest of us. No, I love him to death. He's one of my favorites. I really
I'm okay.
You are, Boo. Don't worry. I got you.
Yeah.
You're still my favorite.
I'm fine.
All right, well, that's going to do it for this episode. I hope everybody enjoyed it. Remember, you can leave comments or email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com, or you can just comment on the post in the group that we always put up, which you would join our Facebook group. We're over 1,000 strong, The Hollywood Outsider, and we're also on Twitter @BuyPopcorn. Remember to grab the Ho on the Go with our Android apps. The Apple one will be going away because nobody really uses it because they always use Apple Podcasts. But the Android app does get used, so you can find us there and Spotify, or you can subscribe and review us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, thehollywoodoutsider.com, or your podcast app of choice. You can always find John's artwork on Insta and everywhere else at rjohn.draws, and me and my other podcast, Smirk, Remake This Movie Right, Beyond Westworld, and The Blacklist Exposed. I'm quitting all of them soon, I swear to God.
You're busy.
A couple of them are going away, Tammy. A couple of them are going away. So that's going to be good. We just did a really good Smirk one, I thought, that kind of tackles the Me Too movement, which is a really touchy subject, but I think we had a good conversation about it. So
check that out.
Yeah, and let us know how bad we did. It was interesting. It was interesting. That was great. Thanks for coming. Tammy?
Thank you for inviting me. I really do appreciate it. And I really did try to stay sober for this. I want to say, honestly, all jokes aside, I really appreciate you and the Hollywood Outsider family. And it was great to finally to speak to Amanda, other than, you know, sending gifts to each other. John, I will stalk you on IG as usual. And thank you so much. I had a good time, and you made me like research things I didn't plan to research and buy popcorn. But thank you. I appreciate that. I really appreciate being on here and having fun.
Oh, you'll be back. I promise you'll be back.
Yay! And next time I will serenade you all.
Oh, please do. John likes that.
Oh, absolutely.
Ooh, good. Okay, I'll find a perfect song.
Oh, before we go, I do want to say come back next week. We're going to have, hopefully, fingers crossed, we are going to have, what's his name, John?
Kevin Flynn. He's one of the co-hosts of the Crime Writers On podcast, as well as he is the host of the podcast These Are Their Stories, which covers nothing but Law and Order episodes. And it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, should be fun. We're going to talk about true crime. True crime.
That scares the crap out of me.
Me too, man. I get paranoid. I don't even want to get out of my car. I go run in a park, and every time I'm running and I see somebody coming at me, I get ready to punch him in the face. I don't know if that's wrong.
No, like legit, like I'm like, what are you doing? Where's your hand? Okay. I have to watch people, especially at night when I'm walking the dog. I'm like, sorry.
It's okay.
I get freaked out.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this episode. Remember, the next time you head to the theater, buy popcorn.
Night.
Night?
It's going down, boo.
That sounds like a venereal disease, but whatever. I'll take that out.
It was a funny joke, but maybe not on like the cultural appropriation thing.
Not with the Matt and the Pixar thing. So
that too.
Oopsie. While in prison for 5 years, Debbie Ocean devises the heist of her career. Like her brother, she knows what it takes to... I me twice. Okay. All right. Let's see. Okay, while in prison for 5 years, Debbie Ocean devised the heist of her career. Like her brother, she knows what it takes to... Shit. Sorry.
She knows what it takes to shit?
Sometimes people don't know how. It's called constipation.